Write On Audio, the podcast for writers and all who are interested in books, literature, and the printed word. Write On Audio is the weekly companion podcast of Write On magazine and the Write On suite of publications from Pen to Print. Subscribe by searching Pen to Print in your favourite podcast app to have new editions delivered to you each week. Write On Audio interviews. Our May interview is with Julie Finch, the Chief Executive Officer of the Hay Festival. Hay is one of the UK's biggest annual literary and book festivals, taking place at Hay-on-Wye in Wales. With a wide range of events and guests from the world of books and writing, it is an important annual touchstone for the worlds of publishing and literature. Here's Julie to tell us more about the festival and her role in bringing it all together. The interviewer is Write On team member Janaya Chowdhury.
From very humble beginnings, attracting only just a few hundred visitors when it was first founded, like 35, 36 years ago, the Hay Festival has come a long way. It has become a global brand and now has a global reach of millions. What factors would you attribute to its success?
Well, that's a super big question to begin with. You know, I've been in this role for 6 months now, and the legacy which the Florence family, but also the Hay family at large, has created over those 36 years is the success factor. That this organisation, this charity, is important to so many people. And the Hay family, that the people that sit in the halo around Hay, have a generosity of spirit for the arts, for education, and for literature and new ideas, which enables Hay to continue to develop and change and contemporize, and positions Hay at the leading edge of thinking when it comes to ideas and literature. And that's probably a long answer to the question, but I think there is a magic in that generosity of spirit, which I've experienced since I've been in post.
How far, in terms of the founder's ideal, Peter Florence's ideal vision of Hay and its mission to inspire, examine and entertain, as well as expand and extend conversation and curiosity, how far do you think, you know, you've come in terms of upholding that vision?
Well, I think if we need to sort of draw a line on the past in a way, because obviously Peter's no longer part of Hay Festival. And from a media point of view, we need to be very clear that we have, you know, very grateful to the Florence family and to all the people that have been involved in the past. But we've now got to look to the future, and it's a very different kind of future. And COVID has changed every cultural institution, some beyond recognition. And there's been a seismic moment across the world. People need new things. They need new ways of thinking about the world, operating within the world, living, and also finding solutions to some of the problems that they face and how they live their lives. So I think the original, you know, if you think about literature festivals at large or ideas festivals, we're in the maelstrom of a huge change and seismic shift. So in terms of the new world and contemporary society post-COVID, there's a lot of work that cultural institutions are undertaking to really think about how festivals can be relevant and exciting for the widest range of people possible. And I think that's something that we've all got to focus on, think about equalities, diversity and inclusion in its broadest sense, not only the writers and the experts, and particularly our audiences, and recognising that people have completely different viewpoints. People want to find solutions in new ways and want to live differently because a lot of our systems don't work anymore. So I think the reason for having such events has moved on, and it's not enough that our strapline has been to imagine the world. And that's been a long-standing strapline for Hay. But I think we need to take it further. We need to imagine the world and take action. And so Hay now is much more focusing on how we can activate society, how we can empower the public, how we can help people and support people to see new perspectives and think differently about everyday things, but also the really big issues that the world's facing. And the other part to it, of course, and we mustn't lose that, is we want people to enjoy themselves and to escape, to have time and a place to think and relax and be themselves, so they can attend Hay in an atmosphere that enables them to relax and think differently about the world.
You mentioned diversity. Just to put it out there, diversity and inclusivity are kind of buzzwords at the moment. Everyone's looking to be more diverse and inclusive. How do you go about building trust and ensure that you actually, you know, that your words actually translate into something and mean something?
So I've worked in the cultural sector for quite a few years now, and in developing new museum projects which focus on representation of the communities that they serve, so one in Bristol and one in Western Australia in Perth. This is all about building relationships. The starting point is how open organisations are to having conversations about what the public really want, not what cultural institutions think public need. And I think that it is easy to say, but actually it's quite a complex process where cultural institutions very much need to open their minds and look at themselves in the mirror to really question how what inclusivity means and how far organisations are willing to go. And co-production is another buzz phrase that gets sort of thrown around. And true collaboration, working with communities, asking communities what it is they're interested in and what they're facing on a daily basis and what they would like to participate in is the starting point. And I think the whole piece around, you know, festivals different to museums, museums take quite a long time to develop, gestation time is 5 to 10 years usually. So there's usually a long time for that consultation and participative working practice. For festivals, it's the time frames are shorter because the issues are changing rapidly and the things we're dealing with today probably aren't the things we're going to be worried about in 2 years' time. There'll be a new set of issues. So for festivals to become truly inclusive, they need to engage with their audiences in new and exciting ways. And we're doing a number of things at Hay. We've held some public consultation, open sessions where we've asked the public what it is they would like to see more of, less of. We've surveyed our current database, and in the future, we're going to work more directly with people who don't come to Hay at all and speak to communities who feel that they're not represented by the content at Hay. So I think that honesty and transparency in those relationships is key. I could talk about this for quite a long time, but I'll stop there because I'm sure you've got another question.
No, so my next question leads on from that, kind of like, what practical things are you doing to revamp the idea of the appeal of the Hay Festival? Kind of like, you know, so like, you know, that idea, that the notion that it's kind of only worthwhile if you're white, middle class and privileged. Again, it's one thing saying equality of opportunity, but not all opportunities are equal. But, you know, what are you doing for kind of, you know, the working class writers, the kind of people with kind of different cultural religious needs, like lower incomes?
Yeah, so I think for to start with, Hay has been working with artists who come from a wide range of backgrounds, who might have, might be neurodiverse, disabled in some physical way, etc. You know, I won't go through all the groups. You know, how people become categorized in that to that extent. So, a lot of the people who are on stage are from diverse backgrounds, and that's been happening for a few years. And certainly during COVID, there was a lot more in terms of our digital program, and we were reaching many more people at home than we've ever reached before, and had testimonials from people who'd never experienced Hay before, but through our digital programming, they were able to do that. So I think that the first thing is the medium, thinking about how the communication tools work and whether in person is the only way of communicating. The second thing is we are very strategic about who we partner with. So, for example, the National Literacy Trust, they want to and are working with us in their programme to encourage literacy across the UK. So we can link with other partners to enable really close working with groups where our work is required most of all. We also run the Scribblers Tour, which is now in its 12th year, which runs out across Wales. We'd like to extend that to England as well. And writers go to schools and universities over a 2-week period, which is all in English, but we also have 4 days which are in Welsh earlier in the year. So I've got endless number of projects that, you know, lead to eventually those groups of people in communities coming to Hay Festival in Wales. But I think we have to recognise that we are programming 60 days of festival activity a year. So it's not just Hay Wales, it's all of our other programme right across the world, and our education work and community work in other countries, as well as the work we're doing here in the UK, that actually, you know, we could argue that we're doing a lot to diversify what we offer and how we work with organisations and also audiences, because we are working right across the world. And I think that's what makes Hay Festival unique. And this is not just custom and practice. We are continually addressing how we do that, how we improve our partnership working, how we improve the opportunities for children and young people in particular, and how we engage with new organisations to deepen the impact and engagement. It's a challenge because obviously funding is often for only 1 year, but lots of cultural institutions have that problem. So we're trying to find creative ways to address how we can continue funding and our work.
I'm so interested in what you the digital programming, because what we found at Write On was that obviously COVID completely shifted. We were a physical magazine, and then we had to find a new way of reaching out, which is how we've built such a huge readership globally, actually, from, you know, we've got readers in Australia, we've got readers all over the place. And it was that digital programming that allowed that diversity. But what I found, I think, and I can just cite back to Hay. I was there last year and I heard Wyn Thomas speak. And actually from that came an interview which we ran on the podcast, and I interviewed him for the magazine. And that created significant ripple effects where we had, thanks to Hay and that thought leadership, it allowed me to engage with some of those concepts. And we actually got quite a lot of input, the ripple effects from across the world, looking at diversity and how the Welsh and the Welsh language and how that had been embedded in literature and the importance of actually maintaining that rigor and that authenticity. And people felt compelled to write in based on their own experiences in different parts of the world. Wow. So that thought leadership that Hay showed was actually incredibly important. And I would just say, obviously, from our perspective, the fact that you're partnering with Write On, in effect, you know, we're growing, but we are still a minnow in the cultural world, I think is really important. So to me, I just wanted to break in with that, because I think that the digitalization is definitely incredibly important in terms of democratization of the process. And I think that co-creation, which I'll hopefully be doing that panel on, is a very important thing. But I will say on the co-creation, and I know Janae is going to come to this question in a minute, there's several people I wanted for my panel who, for reasons of finance and just worries that Janae will talk about in a minute, won't actually be able to attend Hay.
We're all pushing at the same things here, where, and maybe that, you know, that's the wrong word, but it does feel like there needs to be some breakthrough moments where the opportunity is available for everybody on the same level. And I think that's what, you know, we're passionate about at Hay. And it's not, you know, Hay's future is not about a festival for only the people who can afford to spend money on attending festivals in, you know, in different parts of the country. This is about improving the opportunity for reading and writing and understanding literature and language. And we are there to support people to do that and support people on their journey. And obviously, we're not the only institution doing that. There are many institutions working towards the same end. So partnering is key. And I think this generosity of spirit that I talk about is really important, because if we became territorial about the work we're doing and the ideas, that doesn't help anyone. So our other remit is the spread of ideas for growth and inclusion and opportunity. And that way, again, the generosity of spirit becomes a big part of our, you know, the way we operate, basically. So we want to support as many organisations as we can. Yes, money comes into that, obviously, and it's a real challenge in this environment today, post-COVID, and the world that we're living in. But we have to find ways to get through some of those barriers.
I was going to ask, last year, a Muslim writer friend of mine was really keen on going to the Hay Festival, but she had this notion that she was only going to be the brown person in the headscarf, and she's not going to have those kind of, you know, her religious needs and were not going to be met. She thought that there's not going to be appropriate prayer rooms or like where she could kind of observe her religion, and that really put her off. So at the last minute, she changed her mind. Like, where, you know, those questions that have not been answered, she couldn't find the answers to. Are there going to be prayer facilities? Are there going to be kind of separate washrooms and things like that? No, I know you can't cater for everyone, but, you know, reaching out to the diverse community, things like that need to be in consideration, because, you know, like she said, you know, I actually thought I'm going to be like spot the brown person, you know, the only person like isolated in the corner, kind of. I didn't want to feel left out. So that's, you know, it was all in my head, but then nobody answered those questions for me. So I just let it be. And I thought, no, forget it.
The challenge, the physicality of the site.
Yeah.
Hay is interesting for me, because obviously I've worked with bricks and mortar in developing museums and stories and working with people and including prayer rooms as part of the footprint of the venue. That I think also there's the other kind of perspective on this, that until festivals go into some deeper consultation with underrepresented groups and really ask them about their needs and how they would feel in the physical space and what needs to change in order for those physical spaces to feel more welcoming, we won't get it right. And so it's not enough for me to say, oh, well, I think I know what a prayer room looks like. There's something about, okay, we need to talk to people to find out about what it is the needs are and how we can manifest that. So the physicality is, there's a big piece of work there to think about that and how we get that right. And for everyone to feel welcome would be our aspiration. And it is an aspiration, because we haven't got it all right. And I think this is where institutions need to really look at themselves and ask them, why do a lot of white people go to festivals? What is it that's stopping other people come to festivals? And programming, you know, diversity isn't enough. It simply isn't. That's tokenistic. And it's not great for the people on the stage either. Who are you know, hosting the sessions or, you know, speaking. So I think there's got to be an honesty. So I really appreciate this conversation, because it's, you know, a really helpful reminder to all festivals that we need to think about the physicality of the spaces. And then in terms of the intellectual experience, you know, the way in which you can attend because you feel there's content there that's really relevant to you. Again, I don't think we should decide that. I think we have to go out and ask people who it is they would find interesting and interesting enough and to feel represented well enough with enough people. So it's not holding two or three events. It's looking at, you know, the overall program and thinking about how different communities will begin to feel more welcome and represented in our content. So we're not there yet, is the honest answer.
When putting diversity on the big agenda, how do you measure the success of these events? How do you know you've made it, kind of in terms of like diversifying, including everyone? You know, what steps do you take to kind of ensure that there are, like, I'm sure you've got a tick list, but what would you say is the most important thing? When, you know, do you look at turnout and numbers, or is it feedback, social media coverage? What would you say are the main factors?
Well, it's all of those things. I mean, Hay doesn't have a strategic plan, but it will have by the end of this year. And the way in which we measure our success, looking at the softer elements and also the hard numbers, will be an intrinsic part of our audience development plan and our programming plan. And that's all very well. That's wonderful to have a strategic plan. But I think observation is also really important, and being lots of institutions can recall to their boards all of the fantastically positive comments that, you know, arrive on social media or in a comments book or wherever the feedback is. But we've also got to find a mechanism for some honesty around the things that haven't gone so well, and talk to our audiences about how we can improve what we're doing and be on that kind of continual improvement an engagement program, and not be afraid of doing that. And you know, that takes it takes courage, because people in the arts are very precious about their work. No one really likes criticism, but constructive criticism is helpful, in my view, and that's the way in which you become more relevant. So this, again, it's all about relationship building, which takes years, not just one festival. And we have to remember that and be honest with ourselves about that.
Got a few colleagues, a question from one of my fellow writers. She says, increasingly there are drives for more diversity in the arts, but this isn't translating into paid work for working class creatives. In fact, the proportion of working class people in the creative industries has shrunk since the 70s from 16.4% to just 7.9%. This includes writers, musicians, and artists. How do you think working class writers can be better supported to have their work seen and published?
I'm assuming that these people who are all haven't had anything published yet. So for me, there's a whole piece around the publishing industry which needs to be addressed. And my observation, and I'm new to the publishing industry, in that I've never had anything published and I haven't run a literature festival before. However, what I have noticed is that post-COVID, there's a lot of money on safe bets and the books that are going to make money, which makes it even harder for new entrants to become published. And Hay Festival has a number of projects where we encourage debutant pieces of work, and we always showcase new work at the festival. So there is a place, and regardless of what publishers are saying, we go out of our way to seek those new voices, and the breadth of voices is also really important. I think for me, this starts with early years education, and it starts with our schools program, and it is really important for us to realise what our role is, to inspire children and young people to write and to read, because that's the first step. And we know that 1 in 5 children in the UK don't have access to books. So there's something really fundamental there, which is linked to lower socioeconomic groups, that stops a lot of people even coming through as writers to begin with. So I think we have to look at the whole system, the way that Hay operates from early years through to young adults, and how we can support people on that journey. Admittedly, there's only so many people we can support on that journey. But if we can help some new voices to come through, then that's a success story. And that does happen. That definitely does happen.
Okay, so I think you've sort of answered that. What role do you think festivals like Hay have in making the industry more accessible to working class writers?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. The smaller publishing houses tend to take more risks, and that kind of independent thinking is really critical. I think we have to have more critical debates around the journey that writers go through, and the way in which publishers operate as vehicles for new talent. To my mind, they should have a quota for new talent and make the, you know, the people who make money for them support that. So there should be some kind of system where you can buddy up with a new writer and you can help support and mentor them and help them through that process. So I think writers can help writers. And I think bringing the control back to the writers and not to the publishers is also really important.
If I could come in on that as well, the issue you're sponsoring, as you know, we have John O'Farrell, the satirist and political pundit, etc., and writer of Chicken Run as our headline. And one of the questions we asked him was around the tension between, you know, the white, because he's obviously white, middle class, privileged, male and pale, and, you know, the industry pushing up from below. And what we identified, and I think this is where this conversation is so useful, is that tension is incredibly important, because you can have this desire of unagented or, you know, underrepresented writers reaching up. But at the same time, you need that body of the industry, of the festivals pushing down to meet. And I think there needs to be this consensus of this is where we want to be, and actually frameworking that. So I think that's incredibly important. And I think that links, I think, obviously, the fact that you're not originally from publishing, so you've seen from different perspectives, is actually a really, really important thing. But I was also going to say, one thing that may interest you, Julian, Janaire, you probably don't know this yet. I've been looking at analytics for us. And I think one of the things about co-creation that's just so interesting, which is obviously we framework voices, we create that showcase for different voices to come through. And we had, because we had a poet, the Berlin poet, who wrote about football. He's a working class poet who writes poetry from the terraces and built up a following like that. We had someone who'd never written before coming through to us, who'd worked for West Ham Football Club and various things. And we thought, well, he's not talking about writing. But then we put his piece together with Ian Ayres, who has written for us before, and it was a footballing feature. And it was this true co-creation. And what we noticed on analytics, because usually, you know, it's overridingly women. There tends to be that it's more women coming through. It's kind of, you know, a slightly older age group coming through. And what we noticed with that one feature, and it's affected the analytics over the next, ever since, many, many more young men engaging. And we'd have never have known this if it hadn't have been for being able to framework and showcase that co-creation process around different pieces coming together. And I think that was just such an interesting thing. So it's fascinating to hear about that tension and that co-creation that's coming through Hay as well. So again, just a comment, but I thought it probably deepened what we were talking about.
Yeah, I mean, as I sit here, I mean, it's not unfamiliar territory in the museum world, where directors mentored people who are new to the industry, and the generosity of spirit that sits within those relationships enables people to progress their career. So it's not a new idea, and that's certainly my experience of my culture and creative journey. And just to put it out there, I was definitely working class when I started out on this journey, and I, you know, went to university as a mature student. And didn't have any handouts. My family felt I should get a job and not go to university because I needed to help support the family. So it's sort of, you know, thinking about what the lucky breaks are for people, but also how organisations like Hay and other festivals can promote the way in which people give back, and that kind of thanks and encouragement to people who are coming through and want and passionate about writing and want to write. And it's a simple model based on humanity. It's no money involved, you know. It's Zoom calls, it's support, it's leveraging network. And that's what people need.
So what events and opportunities, you know, have the Hay Festival been involved in for working class writers?
We have run various projects over the years, and those have largely been funded by external organisations. So the people involved receive a fee. They're selected based on an open selection process, and we've looked very, very closely at that. Currently, we don't have funding for that, and we're looking at our model as we move forward. So I wouldn't like to sit here and try and represent the fact that we have actively gone out and looked for working class people. I don't think that is a fact. I think, you know, and it's also hard to word and to monitor and not, you know, marginalise anybody and, you know, make them feel disadvantaged just going through a process. There are obviously organisations out there such as yourself, so working with different institutions as partners and being a gateway is really critical. I think there's more to do there.
Finally, if you could paint a picture with words, what would the Hay Festival 2050 look like, and what would be the tagline on the poster or the tin?
Oh gosh, it's all written down, but got just gone completely out of my mind actually. So I think we together we can do more. So our capturing our creative and collective imagination to make a better world.
Thank you to Julie Finch for giving us time to talk about her role in the Hay Festival during the busy run-up to the event. We'll post links in the show notes so you can find out more about the festival and Julie herself. We're always delighted to read your contributions. So if you'd like to see your words in Write On or hear them on this podcast, please get in touch. We'll share this link and all others mentioned in today's podcast as part of our show notes. I've been Tiffany Clare, and you've been listening to Write On Audio. Write On Audio is produced by Chris Gregory, and it's an alternative stories production for Pen to Print. This podcast is supported using public funding by Arts Council England.